This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. Now, last week, the Ministry of Health revealed that the need for mental health support in 2021 far surpassed that of last year. In fact, the whole of 2020 only saw 65,000 consultations recorded. But for the 4 months of this year alone, we saw that number jump to more than 270 cases. So the centre, a centrist think tank, carried out a four-part study, on how the year-long pandemic has impacted people's mental health.
It found that over half of its surveyed respondents experienced worsened mental health over the past year, with women, youths and single individuals making up those numbers. The study also showed that those in social isolation, because they live alone and are working from home, are most likely to have negative mental health. Those with changes to employment and income are also the most vulnerable mental health-wise, especially part-time employees and those unemployed.
Now, their findings, which identified groups of young people, women, those unmarried and whose incomes are reduced, is an observation consistent with other mental well-being studies conducted locally and worldwide. But for some insights into this study and what needs to be addressed right now, we're speaking to Azif Azuddin, policy researcher at the Centre. Thanks for joining us this morning, Azif. Now, based on your study, why is it that women, single individuals and those specifically 35 years and under are the ones experiencing the worst mental health during this COVID-19 pandemic?
So what we found that in these groups, in particular, they have significant challenges when it comes to mental health compared to other segments of people who we surveyed, right, during this pandemic. So for women, right, we believe that this group encounters significant mental health issues mainly because of, you know, gender-related issues. Now, if we look at what has happened over the past year during the pandemic has kind of forced women indoors. So this has led to challenges such as increased risk to domestic violence, uneven distribution of domestic care, and parental challenges. So we're talking about being indoors for a great portion of the time and responsibilities shifting around, maybe sometimes unevenly between spouses or family members. And women are usually at the tail end of, unfortunately, these challenges, right? Now, for youths, however, or shall I say individuals under the age of 35 in our study, we are talking about an entire generation with a different set of challenges that are both economic and social. We have to consider that there is a major disruption to those who are, for example, currently receiving education, right? Students who are undergoing universities but now have to navigate and adapt in a world where we have to do classes over Zoom, for example, compared to going in classes. And then we're also talking about maybe graduates or even current employed individuals who now face uncertain future prospects when it comes to employment. Or even more importantly, the lack of social interaction during a time and age when social interactions are especially important for their development and self-esteem. So when we ran the analysis on these different groups of people who we surveyed, this is what we found, where women, youths, and to add also as well, people who are single, these are drivers that affect their mental health most.
Change or fall of income has always been a stress trigger and comes with higher levels of depression during this COVID era. In the list of financial assistance that these groups of families need, which is most urgent?
What these families need is immediate relief and support for them to get through the current period of financial uncertainty, as well as the mental health issues that come with being in these uncertain times. Now, I do think, though, there are two things worth mentioning here. The first is that we believe that more can be done to support struggling families. If banks, for example, are still making profit in millions and billions, right, while families are still fighting to stay alive, I think that kind of indicates that there is room for more support to be given to those who truly need that support. Secondly, we also need to take this opportunity to start renegotiating the meaning of equitability in how we employ people. Now, there's a lot of data out there that shows that wages have not kept up with the rise in productivity over the past several decades. And we need to ensure that we provide dignity for Malaysians who have worked hard to earn a decent living, right? So, for example, this can be the form of a framework that argues for fair pay, fair working conditions, fair contracts, fair management, and fair representation. And interestingly, this framework, or what we call the Fair Work Act, is something that the Centre has been actively working towards as a way to create a more equitable employment landscape. So we're talking about long-term policies that help, as opposed to maybe short-term ones.
So, Azif, despite the various social economic programs rolled out by the government, many people, I think, continue to be affected psychologically. So what kind of measures do you think need to be carried out along with these programs?
Right. So during the pandemic, it's reasonable to believe that mental health difficulties are rooted in issues related to finances, employment, loneliness, family, and the like. So policies that address the material conditions, right? So we're talking earlier about material conditions such as employment and living. These need to be supplemented by mental health support. So in this instance, we're talking about targeted mental health services such as, for example, community mental health care as an ideal measure. So these type of targeted programs are, one, expensive to carry out because of the resources needed to deliver services, especially because it needs to be tailor-made for the community that you're serving. That said, if you want to help these communities develop the tools to manage their own well-being, you do need to do that by going down to these communities and providing the services where they are. More importantly, it needs to be both affordable and it needs to be accessible. For example, I guess if you want to use a place that's done that successfully, we can look at Melbourne, Australia. They have this thing called a system of care network where public services, public health services and GPs work together to match people with available support according to their needs, right? So it's targeted, sensitive, it's contextualized. And this is very important when discussing mental health support because everyone, right, has a unique set of challenges and different solutions suited, whether it's their socioeconomic backgrounds, whether it's to their beliefs. And to me, when we're talking about mental health, a tailor-made approach is the ideal approach. But that can only happen if there's collaboration from all fronts.
So as if the Health Ministry works with several other ministries in providing mental health outreach, although details of these initiatives are scarce. For example, right, last week, the MOH established a national strategic plan for mental health, but provided very little details. So why is there a disconnect, and what do these ministries need to do to streamline their efforts and messaging?
Right, so that's interesting, right? So while the Ministry of Health leads mental health services and policy, other ministries also receive allocations from the federal budget for mental health programs, right? But the thing we have to see here is that it's for their respective priority areas and stakeholders. So here, what you see is a whole of government approach where different ministries work together towards a common goal of supporting the mental health of Malaysians, but you know, across different stakeholders, across different priority and policy areas. Now, what you ask kind of assumes a disconnect when it may reflect more of an overlap, right? And what I mean by that is that even if there was a disconnect, what's true is this: there is a dire need to improve messaging for mental health across the board. Now, your example, now we're going to come back to the National Strategic Plan here, right? Your example was great because you mentioned that there were no details, right? And that's a good example when we talk about messaging needing to be improved. Now, in my conversations with the different stakeholders in the mental health landscape, a lot of these conversations happen. People are enthusiastic. They're talking about mental health. However, not a lot of these conversations leave the discussion or decision-making space. And sadly, not most of them get translated into actual action as well. So if you're talking about messaging, we need to think about how to communicate to the public first about the availability and access to these support services. Not only access, but why these services are important, right? Because there are instances where people go and reach into their psychologist's room, their psychiatrist's room, or even their counselor's room, not knowing why they're there. And while that conversation about awareness or the importance of mental health is actively happening among the urban middle class, a lot more outreach and communication is needed when it comes to vulnerable groups, such as those in B40 communities, those in among migrant vulnerable groups. This is where those services are needed most. So I think first and foremost, while it's great we're having a lot of awareness now, we need a lot more communication onto the why and the where.
So what might be some of the repercussions if we actually don't address mental health issues and allow it to be widespread due to these weak policies?
Yeah, to be honest, we're kind of already seeing the repercussions. So, I mean, if you're talking about statistics, last year from March to October, PDRM reported that there were over, let's say, 200 suicide cases. The Minister of Health received about 465 attempted suicide cases from, say, what was it, January to June alone last year. So in our study, there was a study that we did last year, right, during the MCO that showed that over a half of our over 1,000 study respondents experience negative mental health when we use the DAS instrument as a measurement tool, right? Now, while the pandemic has increased the mental health awareness of most Malaysians, and there's a lot of discussion going on now across the different economic groups, a lot still needs to be done in strengthening mental health support. This is particularly true when it comes to vulnerable communities, especially low-income rural Malaysians. Ultimately, we need more resources for mental health services. I mean, many Malaysians have been pushing relentlessly about awareness, but this hasn't translated into serious action on part of the government. For instance, right, if we're talking about budget 2021, the allocation for mental health was actually cut from 344.8 million down to 313.4 million. Now, that's a huge cut. Now, that's the saying where put your money where your mouth is. I would say we can say the same about mental health. If it's important, that's where we should be putting our resources to. If not, we're going to be looking at long-term social repercussions coming from this pandemic. As it is, there are already a lot of anecdotal stories or even news reports, right, of individuals dying by suicide from malls, for example, from apartments, and it's just going to get worse if we don't take it seriously.
Thank you for your time. That was Azif Azuddin, policy researcher at the Centre. Now, this morning, we were asking everyone on Twitter, what's stopping you from seeking mental health support? And we actually had 140 votes, with 37% saying too expensive, 24% saying it's the stigma, and 30% saying they don't know how. And for those who don't know how, I think you can reach out for help at Souls Health. Visit their website at www.soulshealth.org, and this is S-O-L-S. There's also a Mental Health Illness Awareness and Support Association at www.miasa.org.my, and of course at Relate Malaysia at www.relate.com.my. And I think there is absolutely, and there should never be, any stigma if you feel that way.
The interesting thing is also awareness. If you see the Twitter flow that comes through, a lot of them are not sure where their mental health position is. And one of them, I won't mention name, said, I am mentally healthy, .. I think.
I think all of us feel this way, but perhaps maybe the first thing is to have that conversation with someone close.
Yes.
That might give you some gauge as to how you're really feeling. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.